Welcome to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm your host, Jenny Taft. This podcast is a condensed version of today's episode of Undisputed, handpicked with the best segments and discussions. Skip, Shannon, let's go.
Our next guest spent 2.5 years as the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. He was let go last week after a 2-5-1 start to the season. And Hugh Jackson, welcome to Undisputed.
Thank you for having me.
Nice to have you here. Yeah, appreciate you joining us. Last week you mentioned wanting to possibly be an offensive coordinator again. So what is next for you?
Well, I think that's what's next. You know, I think you got to take a step back. The first thing I've done is just tried to process all of this that's happened over the last couple of weeks. And when I look back, take the things that are good and make sure you move on from the things that are bad. But the one thing I know I can do is go coordinate offensive football teams in the National Football League. I've done that and kind of go from there.
I agree with that. And I think you'd be great at that. And that was always your strength. And I'm not sure you got to use enough of your strength, especially play calling in as a head coach. So let's start from the start. Let's go back 2 seasons ago to set the stage for what began to unfold, the Myles Garrett draft. Mm-hmm. How much input, how much of a vote did you have in which way to go in that first round?
Oh, I did. We were a collaborative group. Mm-hmm. You know, we worked through it as an organization, made a decision to take Miles, which we truly believe was the right decision.
Did you?
Oh, yeah, I did.
Because
no
you
doubt.
Loved a couple of quarterbacks.
Oh, no, I did like some quarterbacks, but I thought Miles was a generational player. I think he was a cornerstone player for the organization. At the time, there was a need at both positions. But when you looked at the draft and the players, I thought Miles was the best player. Mm.
Between Deshaun and Mahomes, which way would you have leaned?
I like them both. All right. I thought both of them were outstanding players. Obviously, Patrick's having an outstanding season this year, and so is Deshaun. They're both playing really well for their football teams. They both have some skill sets that translate into the National Football League. Patrick can really throw it. Deshaun can throw it, and he uses his legs extremely well. So I think both of those guys are obviously proving out that they are worthy of the draft status that they had.
Okay, so in hindsight, I was bullish, as Shannon knows, on Deshaun. I thought Cleveland should have taken Deshaun and would forever regret not taking him. Do you look back and regret that at all? Would that have changed your life?
I don't, to look back, hindsight's always 20/20, but when you're in it, you know, you don't get a chance to look back. I think obviously getting the offense to a situation where it was playing better, being an offensive head coach was important, but my whole vision was about the division. How do we win the division? What was going to be best for our football teams? And I knew if you couldn't stop the Ben Roethlisbergers, the Joe Flaccos, the Andy Daltons of the world and stop those receivers, that our chances of winning probably wasn't going to be very good. Mm.
But you mentioned, and you said you believe Myles Garrett was a generational player. Mm-hmm. But you know, Hugh, in order to win championships, you got to have that quarterback.
You're right, Shannon. There's no question about that. And I, you know, again, it's all how you see it, you know, as an organization. How much time are you going to take to make those choices and decisions? You know, you said, when I look back at it now, do you wish you could change it? Probably so. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when you're in it, it's definitely the best decision.
Hmm. So how much input and vote did you have on this year's quarterback decision?
A ton. You know, Baker Mayfield is the right guy in the right time for the Cleveland Browns.
So how close were you on Sam Darnold? Was it a hard choice?
Oh, no doubt it was. Yeah. I mean, both of those guys are going to be outstanding players. But when I evaluated Baker, when I saw his internal strength, his ability to get people to play above and beyond the way they play, and just his internal belief on that he has this will to win, and you combine that with his accuracy and arm talent and his performances in big games, and you knew that this guy had it.
And John Dorsey was there with you on that?
No doubt.
And was Jimmy Haslam with you on that? Because he attended the rain pro day that Sam put on here at
Yeah,
USC.
He did. We were all, we went around. I thought that was one thing we did a great job of. We went around to go see all those guys personally. Mm-hmm. And spend time with him and watch him work out and watch him.
Was Mr. Haslam leaning Darnold at that point? That's what was reported.
No, I don't. You know, again, I can't. Wherever that report came from, I did not know that. We made a decision as an organization collectively to take Baker Mayfield, and that was the right decision, no question.
Okay. So I have said this, as Shannon will attest many times on the show, I have always defended and supported you as an offensive mind, play caller, even as a head coach. Mm-hmm. But you lost me during the Hard Knocks episodes over the scene in which you called in Baker and Drew Stanton, and you informed Baker that he had won the backup job. And it seemed like from the start you were not giving him any chance to compete at all for the starting job with Tyrod. So can you background me on that? Can you explain how that all unfolded and why Baker didn't even get a chance from the start?
Absolutely. We made a commitment to Tyrod Taylor when we brought him in that he was going to be the starter. And I thought we needed to get him up and running in the offense. We had a new offensive coordinator, new system. And when you make that commitment in front of your football team and everybody else, you have to support that. If Baker Mayfield was going to become the starting quarterback, it was going to show itself out, you know, over time. It wasn't about if he was with the first unit, the second unit, the third unit. The talent was going to show itself in time. And so I wasn't concerned about that. We had a football team, as you mentioned, that was coming off an 0-16 season. So they needed to know who the leader was. And the one thing I always do with my players, I'm very honest and upfront. So I brought those two guys in to be honest and upfront and tell them exactly.
Drew and Baker.
Yes,
okay.
To tell them exactly how we were going to go about it. And I think that's what you do. I think all players want honesty from the head coach. They want to know the direction, exactly how it's going to go. So there's no ifs, ands, or buts. This is how we're going to do it. And that's what that was about.
So I'm a Baker guy, and it just was a little offensive to me that you relegated him to having to sit before the cameras. And you informed him as the first overall pick, congratulations, you've won the backup job over Drew Stanton. And it just seemed a little beneath him to have to sit through that. But he took it. And I don't, was it for the cameras that you would do that?
I don't think, you know, sometimes, and I'll take full responsibility for that. There's sometimes I can tell the cameras to be off. And it might have been a time where I wanted them off and there wasn't. There hasn't been any other many scenes other than when we let players go. You know, where there was those kind of conversations that were had.
Would you have liked to have the cameras off?
Oh, absolutely. You like to have it back because I don't want people. I mean, it's all optics at the end of the day. You know, I'm going to do what I feel I need to do for a football team and be honest and upfront. And that's what I did. And it wasn't to put, you know, Baker down or to put Drew down. It was to do what I felt was right for a football team and being honest and upfront.
And Baker didn't complain about it that I know of.
No, it's never been an issue at all.
You look at Tyrod. You could have won the first game against the Steelers, missed a field goal. And then in New Orleans, you missed two field goals, two PATs, and then the robbery game at Oakland. So if you, let's just
say. That was Baker, though.
But I'm just saying. But if you, the first two games, let's just say you win both of those games. Are you sitting here today?
No question. You know, I'm sitting here today because I didn't win enough football games. You know, at the end of the day, that's what it is. And I have to respect the decision that the organization made. But you said it. I mean, we had games, and the one thing I regret is I wasn't able to get our team to finish those games in overtime and make the kicks or make sure that we made enough plays, you know, offensively to put us in a better position so we would have a better record. And, again, that's what happens in these situations.
So Hard Knocks has become a powerful vehicle, and it can be beneficial for a team or it can start to tear it apart from inside out. How threatened were you by the fact that you had two coordinators who have big personalities and they were both former head coaches and the cameras started to love both of them, maybe to a fault?
Not at all. I mean, I hired both those guys.
You did?
I hired Todd and I hired Greg. And I don't think I ever get, never have been caught up in what people think or say. And again, I mean, like I said, that's the optics. I mean, I'm not a person that's weak or insecure by any stretch of the imagination. If I was, I never would have put those guys on my staff to begin with. So I know who they are. But at the same time, I think sometimes, you know, the audience seen certain clips of things that were going on. And so they thought, well, maybe there was never a conversation prior to, or this is the way it is until you see the whole thing and was there to see how some of those conversations went. I think we would feel different about them.
But you mentioned in the article that you did with Mary Kay Cabot that you wanted to convince Jimmy Haslam to let you take over the play calling. But that's what you do, Hugh. If you look at some of the great offensive minds that are head coaches, the Sean McVay, the Kyle Shanahans, Andy Reid, they're head coaches, but they also call plays. If you're so good at that, why would you relinquish that role?
Well, I think when you look back, when you're 1-15 on 16, you know, again, I came to Cleveland as one of the offensive play callers of the year. And I think that was hard. I wasn't able to get the offense up and going the way I wanted to. Doesn't matter why. When you look at it, I thought it was time, along with a conversation that we had within the organization, to move forward and make me more of the CEO type within the organization, coach the whole football team. I signed off on it. I hired a coordinator, and then I needed to allow him to do his job.
Right.
You know, I gave him total autonomy of the offense, and I watched. And I got to a point, just like you're saying, where I thought there were things that wasn't being corrected,
right,
that I needed to fix in order to get this train rolling in the right direction. And that's where I was headed. And again, in hindsight, that's something, as you just mentioned, you don't want to do. I'd rather bet on myself in the future than bet on somebody else.
So, go ahead.
Good. But to follow that up, you mentioned you were 1-15, you were 0-16.
Yes.
You didn't have the quarterback or the skill position around him.
Mm-hmm.
So now you get that, and when you get this, now you give it up, Hugh?
You're right.
You finally get the ingredients make the dish the way you want it,
mm-hmm,
and now you're going to turn that cooking over to someone else.
No doubt, and that's what I said. I mean, I can't fault anybody for that but myself. You know, I made that choice and decision. And again, I like the personalities that I brought into the organization. I thought if we were going to change the narrative, we needed people who had been successful offensively and defensively. Again, people got tired of seeing what we were trying to make on offense.
Right.
And I figured we needed a new strategy. I chose that, and I lost. At the end of the day, you know, that's what it is. I didn't get it done.
So you began to have some issues with Todd Haley, but I'm going to hold that question for a moment so that we can take a quick break.
Quick break, yes. No, Hugh, thank you for being here.
No mercy.
All right, welcome back to Undisputed. Former Browns coach Hugh Jackson still with us. And Skip, I'm going to let you pick up where you left off.
So when Jimmy Haslam decided to let you go and, in a shock to me, Todd Haley go at the same time, he said, we will not have discord within this organization. In your view, what caused the discord?
I don't think what Jimmy was saying was internal discord with the staff. I don't, you know, again, you would have to ask Jimmy. He would have to answer that. But I think what Jimmy was really trying to convey is that, you know, we got this young quarterback. He's not trending forward. He's not doing anything better. So let's do everything we can to put him in the best position to be successful. And when you look at it, you know, again, as I said earlier, it's not a decision that I agree with when it came to me, but that's the decision the organization made, so I have to move on from it.
Was there any certain thing you clashed over? I know, I think you wanted to start the undrafted free agent rookie at left tackle, right?
Mm-hmm. No, I think those decisions we made together. I don't, the issues that that people think that happen are normal, everyday issues between coaches.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you have disagreements all the time about the way you want to run a particular play or who's going to play in this particular situation. So I was a little shocked that, you know, it came out as just internal discord. Mm-hmm. I mean, I had disagreements with Greg Williams about defense. I had disagreements about with Amos Jones about special teams. You know, I think any time it's two strong personalities and it's about offense, something that Todd is really good at, that's what's built his reputation. And myself, I mean, I had the job because I could coach offense. I think it gets blown out a little bit more than what it was. So I get it. That's what people say think it is, but I don't think it was just internal discord.
How much did you go back to Oklahoma and try to get some of the things that Baker did from that playbook at Oklahoma? Did you sit down and talk to Lincoln Riley and says, okay, you did this, and he was very, very good at it. How much did you take from Oklahoma OU playbook?
You know, Shannon, I never did those things because in Cleveland, in our video department, we have everything Baker's done.
Okay.
You know, and any time you draft a guy, as you know, you do all that extensive homework on him. So I had at my disposal every play that Baker had. So I went myself and picked out concepts that I thought that would fit him based on what he did. And I remember asking Baker, tell me a few things, write down a few things for me on paper, which he did, which I passed along to the staff.
Right.
Because I think that's what's important. We needed him to take ownership
of
it to be the best he could be. So there's all kind of ways of doing this.
Right.
That's just the way I chose to do it.
So during Hard Knocks, you recruited Dez Bryant, and then all of a sudden, it went nowhere. What happened? He just signed with the Saints, by the way.
Congratulations to him. I mean, obviously, you know, it's got to fit on both sides. And I think Dez Bryant's going to go do great things for the Saints. But at that time where we were, it just wasn't the right fit.
So that was your choice, not his.
I think it was our choice. I think together, you know, for what we needed at the time and where we were and where he was, it just didn't work out at that time.
And what happened with Josh Gordon, who Tom Brady has turned into a pretty good, it's Tom's favorite target now.
Absolutely. I mean, we know what type of talent Josh Gordon is. And sometimes I think players need different sceneries, you know, in order to be all they can be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everything that this young man had dealt with had been in Cleveland. You know, that's all he knew. So I think he's in a place and a better place for him professionally, emotionally, mentally. And I think you're starting to see the real Josh Gordon, and I wish him well.
Was that your choice to cut ties with him?
We made a decision as an organization just to move forward.
Because of what happened on that Saturday when he had an appearance and then had a hamstring?
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. And obviously that's internal business, and I'll keep it at that. But we made a decision that we truly felt was best for the organization to move forward. And it was the right thing to do for the young man and for the organization. Mm.
You had waited patiently so long on Josh. You guys are stuck by him. Failed test, suspension. So to get to this point, after being in his corner for so long, it had to be hard to move on.
Yes, it was hard. You know, but I think we as an organization made a decision that we felt that anything that we thought was going to stop us or hinder us from being the best version of an organization and football team that we could be, that we would move forward. And that's what we did.
How much do you think it's hurt Baker's development not to have Josh Gordon? Then he lost Higgins and Willis and various receivers. Has he been a little handicapped?
Absolutely. Anytime you lose some of the more talented players on your team when you're playing, it's hard, especially when you're a rookie player. You know, obviously Jarvis Landry is doing some good things for him, and Jarvis is a tremendous competitor and player. But at the same time, you want to make sure your quarterback has all the options that he can have, you know. So did it hurt a little bit? I'm sure it did, you know. But Baker is such a competitor. You know, he's going to look to find a way to overcome it. And I think he's learning in the National Football League. You do need all the guys at your disposal in order to have success.
Mm-hmm. How good can he be?
I think he's going to be really good. I really believe he is. I think he has all the characteristics that you need. I've said this before and I'll say it again. I think the key's got to be him. Everything you do from here on in is about Baker Mayfield. How do you make him the best version of himself as a player? How do you create the environment, you know, around the organization for him so that he can lead at all times? And then I think you will see all the characteristics that I mentioned earlier will show itself. Hmm. I think he's going to be really good.
What does he have to, number one, correct in what he does?
I think the biggest thing for Baker that he's learning that these guys in the National Football League can run. You know, when you take out outside the pocket, you know, and they hit pretty hard. You know, they're not just trying to be nice to you. You know, and I think he's learning that there's a time to throw the ball away and there's a time to go make that special play. And I think once he masters that, I think the sky's the limit for him. Mm.
The arm talent is what you thought it would be?
It's better than what I thought. Yep. No doubt. Mm. He can throw the ball with anybody.
Mm. Wow. All right. Well, thank you for being here, Hugh. Really interesting, and we wish you the
well
best
done.
With your next
thank
move.
You.
Thank you.
Yes, thank you for being here.
No mercy.
The Patriots had a big 31-17 win Sunday night against the Packers. Aaron Rodgers threw 2 touchdown passes in the game, but he also had 19 incompletions. Inside the NFL posted a clip of Bill Belichick mic'd up during the game, talking to his defense about Rodgers. Let's hear it.
The pass rush is what we want. We just got to keep doing it. Hey. We got to keep doing it for 60 minutes. The pass rush is what we want, all right? Keep working the out of those guards. Keep in a pocket. He's trying to throw us 2 interceptions now. We're going to get one, all right? He's just lobbing it up there. That's a great job. Keep pressing him. If he runs backwards, all right, then run him out of bounds. That's great.
Skip, what did that clip tell you?
I'm afraid my man Shannon Sharp isn't going to respect me after this opinion, but... To me, that was shocking on 2 levels. Number one, I rarely hear Bill Belichick get caught on tape on sideline microphones. Mm-hmm. He just sort of avoids it. You just don't hear it very often. Mm-hmm. That was maybe not a first, but it's been a long while since I heard that. And number two, I was shocked that he would speak so negatively about a great quarterback that he praised so effusively, so profusely ahead of the football game. So to me, Bill Belichick was saying that Aaron Rodgers will get gun-shy and careless if you just keep him in the pocket and keep turning up the heat on him. And Belichick is saying that he already was getting panicky because he had already tried to throw them 2 interceptions by, to quote Belichick, lobbing it up there. Lobbing it up there? Yeah. Aaron Rodgers just sort of flicking it out of the pocket when he felt the heat start to get to him. I don't know if he's suggesting Aaron is starting to lose his nerve after he's been
hit
too much. Well, I don't know.
I do.
Maybe. So maybe Belichick was just trying to reignite his pass rushers, but I think he revealed more of his true view of an Aaron Rodgers for whom he doesn't have that much respect, not ultimate respect, or he wouldn't have gone there. And I'm here to suggest that no other head coach in this league would ever be caught on microphone saying that about Tom Brady during the game. I just don't think you'd ever hear that about Brady because they'd just be too afraid of him. You just don't speak that way about Tom Brady.
But Aaron Rodgers doesn't know he's saying that. He knows it just like we're knowing it right now.
Well, but I think you heard the truth. I think you heard effectively behind closed doors that got out into the public.
Skip, if you don't mind me asking, what's he supposed to tell his team? That's a great guy over there. We got no chance?
No, but you just don't. You don't have to be dismissive and disrespectful of Aaron Rodgers as you try to inspire your pass.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to do.
You'd be the other way around. You'd be saying, he's going to riddle us. He's going to pick us to pieces if you guys don't get there.
No.
That's what I would say.
I don't plant negative. You don't plant negative seeds in your player's mind. Mm. Skip, you keep talking about, he's dismissive and Aaron Rodgers. If you look at the playoff games that Tom Brady has lost, the Giants in the Super Bowl, what did they do? They beat him up. Mm. He lost those two AFC championship games in Denver. What did they do? They beat him up. They beat him up so bad they went and got Dante Scarnecchia, the offensive line coach, out of retirement. Did they not, Skip Bayless?
Did he ever look gun-shy to you in the pocket?
Skip, yes.
Did he ever seem to crumble to you? Did he ever seem to lose his nerve?
Skip, Aaron Rodgers didn't lose his nerve.
Did he ever start to lob it up for the defense to pick it off?
That's Belichick's assessment. Mm. That's his assessment.
I think it was true view. You know, I do. I don't think he would have said that.
I believe you will say, Skip, if you would have heard some of the things that our coaches told us, and we're playing some of the all-time great defenders, what we're saying, what the coach is telling us, because you can't look at him as Aaron Rodgers, the GOAT, when you're going up against him. You can't look at a Reggie White. You can't look at a Deion Sanders as these mythical players when you're playing against them. You got to look at them as ordinary guys and say, this is what we got to do.
I know, but you can't convince your pass rushers with pure hyperbole. You know, you can't just, like, make it up and say, he's crumbling. He's lobbing it up there. They're not going to buy it.
Yeah, they will.
Unless they think there's some truth to what you're saying.
Guess what? When we played in the Super Bowl, Super Bowl 32, we're going against Brett Favre. Brett Favre's the MVP. They say you can't blitz Brett Favre. Greg Robinson said, the hell you can't. He's telling his guys on the sideline, he's going to throw us interceptions, guys. Just make sure we hold on to it.
Hey, I've told you this before. I was around a bunch of Cowboy teams that played Brett in the postseason,
yes!
And that was the mantra going in.
Yes!
He will throw you three, but you have to be ready to catch them because they're going to come 100 miles an hour, and you're usually not ready for it to be off target and hit you in the hands.
Right.
But if you can catch them, we'll win the game.
Look, I tell you what. You give me any quarterback, you take any quarterback, any generation, give me a great pass rush, and I beat you.
Yeah, but some will stand in and take it right in the mouth.
I want them to.
And some will keep firing.
But eventually, I'll make them flinch.
Mm.
I can't play with these rules, Skip. I got to play with the old school rules because I got to make him flinch. I
got
to be able to keep a helmet.
No, I got it.
Look at how did the Giants beat Joe Montana? That ferocious pass rush.
Well, they didn't beat him. They sent him to the hospital.
Exactly.
They literally sent him to the hospital. So if you can do that, God bless, right?
And the Broncos, when they beat the Patriots in those championship games, D-Ware, Malik Jackson, Wolf, Vaughn, four men.
Okay, but the one you're talking about, the AFC championship game at Denver, Brady is still throwing into the end zone to win the game at the end. So it's not like he just crumbled under your pressure, right?
Here's the thing, though. At that point in the game, Denver has to look. If they don't get a scoop and score or a pick six, so now they're just like, we run the ball, just run time off.
Okay.
But the 2 years before that, when they got beat by Seattle, you saw that pressure was relentless.
Okay, I agree. But do I think Cam Newton is gun-shy? I do. I definitely do not. And what happened in the Super Bowl to Cam Newton against that Denver pass rush? It was relentless, and he just got destroyed.
Yeah. But Skip, but here's the thing now. They changed the rules because you remember opening day Thursday night, what Broncos were doing to Cam. That was illegal. If the Broncos were to hit, if you were to hit Tom Brady, like they hit Cam in the Super Bowl, Skip,
what's the name? Darren Stewart?
Yes.
He was just like a kamikaze, just flying around, just blasting.
Brandon Marshall hit him up on the chin with his helmet. So if you were to hit Tom Brady, like they hit Cam in the Super Bowl, Skip, penalties do you think they're going to throw?
Now?
Exactly. So I get what Coach Belichick is doing because when you're playing these guys, Skip, you got to convince your guys he's a normal guy. You can't make him bigger than what he already is. But they know what they're up against. They know they got their hands full. And he's saying, you're doing a great job. Hey, work that guard inside. he cursed, then bleep that out. Work that guard inside, because what you want to do, Skip, you want to push him to the side and then chase him out of bounds. You don't want him to step up in the pocket. So Coach Belichick was doing what most great coaches do, is that they convince their players that you're doing an excellent job. Hmm. And they were.
At the expense of a guy you called
the greatest player in football? I don't care about his expense. I'm worried about my team. I don't care about your feelings over there. Coach Belichick don't care about your feelings.
Do you think other head coaches are saying that about Tom Brady?
Yeah.
That he's basically getting scared and he's going to lob it up to us and he's already tried to throw us two interceptions. I don't think anybody's ever said that during a game about Tom Brady. Ever.
We just happen to hear because he's mic'd up.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying off microphone, I don't think anybody's ever said that.
Oh, yeah.
No.
Oh, they've said worse.
No,
they've said worse.
So.
I'm telling you. Skip, yeah. I'm telling you.
They might say he's corny. They might say he's cliche. They don't say he's afraid.
He gets scared.
Nobody says he's afraid.
Yeah, he gets scared.
Yeah.
When they started putting them Rydells on him.
Yeah. He got so scared against the Giants in the first Eli Super Bowl that he drove his team 80 yards and hit Randy Moss with what should have been the winning touchdown pass with 2 minutes left.
I'm trying to figure out, Skip, why.
Did he crumble under the
pressure? I'm just, Jen, I'm trying to understand a team that averaged 36 points a game, why they only got 14.
The Giants are really good.
Because Strahan and Olsen and Tuck and the other big dude, they were coming.
Human Euro.
Yeah, they were coming.
Yeah.
Conte. I think the Conte.
They
were coming.
Yeah.
Four-man pressure.
I mean, that's one of the great pass rushes in the history of football.
Make them shut it down. In the Giants, when you get to Montana, when you have LT.
And the final score of that game should have been 14-10 New England. You know
it. Why you only get four? Whoa. You mean to tell Coach Belichick got to hold somebody to 10 points in the Super Bowl in order for you to win a game? You average 36?
What happened in the final regular season game at the Giants? What happened? It went right to the wire.
Yeah.
You don't think the Giants were inspired by that?
So let me get it straight. You scored, 35, 42 in the last preseason in the regular season game?
Yep.
And you could only get me 14 4 weeks later? What's going on, Skip?
It was inspired. It was an all-time great effort, and it should have been for a big L, a big hot L.
And that's what Coach Coughlin did. Mm-hmm. He was inspired him. Guys, we're doing great. Mm-hmm. We're getting to him.
Did Coach Coughlin draw up the final big pass play from Eli to helmet catch? Did he say, Eli, I want you to escape five Patriots and run circles in the backfield, and finally just close your eyes and actually put your hand over your eyes and throw it as far down the middle of the field into trouble as you can and hope that David Tyree sticks it in his face mask.
Eli saw it.
He did not see anything but Patriot jerseys. No. He just threw it as far
and
as he could
shook them off. And he shook them off. They had him. Eli just shaking them off.
Shaking them off. We know.
Eli Taylor Swift's on. Shake them off.
Yeah, and he's, one of the most mobile quarterbacks we've ever seen, right?
He's more mobile than somebody else we know.
Who?
You know who.
I
don't
know.
The guy he was playing against.
Oh, Tom Brady.
Yeah.
That's true. I'll give you that one. But Tom Brady doesn't need mobility.
Eli doesn't either.
Well, he did on that play.
Eli, hold on, Jenny. This is the way Skip Bayless tells me.
Okay.
If you're the GOAT, I beat you twice, head to head, because Skip Bayless tells me the quarterbacks are playing each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to stick to that theory. If I beat you twice and you the GOAT, how come I'm not the GOAT?
Because you lucked into the first one.
Don't do that. Don't do me like that.
I'll give you the second one. You beat him the second time.
You beat him the first one, too.
No.
So Eli the GOAT.
Sorry.
Eli took down the man that's only lost 18 times in 18 years.
By the way, the GOAT, according to you, is Aaron Rodgers. And Aaron Rodgers' QBR has plummeted all the way to 22nd in the league at 53, which is scale 0 to 100. It's not very good.
Well, whoever does QBR, they don't like Aaron Rodgers.
Yeah. And by the way, Aaron Rodgers' last Super Bowl was 9 years ago, and that was his one and only?
Yeah, why
Well, seriously. So is it possible Belichick was just giving you his true view? I think he's telling you what everybody's saying behind closed doors. He's getting a little panicky.
No, Skip, look. We all know that coaches normally play the ultimate respect. No matter how bad, they say Blake Bortles look good. They'll say Nathan Peterman is good. You know what they say publicly, but behind closed doors, it's a different story because I have to convince my team that we can beat this team. Now, if I'm heaping praise and say this guy's going to be in Canton and I don't know what we're going to do with him, well, how does that reinforce a positive feeling within my team? You don't think my coach don't think we can beat him? How can we beat him?
He's already tried to throw us two. Aaron Rodgers, really?
This is what I know. The man has the highest touchdown and interception
ratio. He does.
Well,
that's what I'm saying.
And it is not even close.
And and that has translated in the postseason into what? Wait, he's
five and six
since his Super Bowl? Five and six? And all five of his wins since his Super Bowl are all questionable because they're unimpressive.
If Coach Belichick was his D coordinator and he holding teams to 17 points in the playoff, Aaron Rodgers, they don't tell him what he'd be. He might not lost the playoff game considering he's never scored less than 20 points in the playoffs.
Really?
So, Coach Belichick.
Wait, are you talking about the same Belichick who gave up 41 to Nick Foles?
Oh, my goodness.
Yikes.
Oh, really?
Oh, really? It happened. You can look it up. It wasn't that long ago.
Oh, no. Aaron Rodgers' defense gave up 51 to Arizona.
Well, that was 15 years ago.
Oh, don't do that, Skip.
Well, it was.
Hold on. So when he gave up those, that was 15 months ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying, Belichick is.
Coach Belichick was trying to get his team inspired, and he did a very good job of that. So don't read into it any more than that.
Who won the game?
The Patriots won.
Oh. Yeah.
Who threw for 104 yards in the fourth quarter and went 6 for 6? The GOAT did. The real GOAT.
No.
The only number 12, the one who resides in Foxborough.
I sure wish Coach Belichick was in Green Bay.
Yeah.
I wish he was mic'd up more.
You know what? You can have him.
Yeah, you don't want that to happen.
No, I want Josh McDaniels to be the head coach.
Well, he's
let's go
there,
forward until we're 45.
He's out there looking for. He's out there interested in coaching again. Mm. If somebody give this weasel scoundrel a job after what
weasel
he pulled,
scoundrel.
Yeah, after what he pulled on Indy Skip Baylor, you know that was a sucker move.
It was a sucker move, but he stayed for all the right reasons.
No, ain't no sucker, sucker. Mm. That's a sucker move, Jenny.
Okay.
And you remember what he did at the Rams?
Yeah.
So I just want to see what he would do without Tom Brady. You keep telling about Coach Belichick, what was it without Tom Brady? What was Josh McDaniel in Denver without Tom Brady?
Mm.
What was he in St. Louis without Tom Brady?
Well, Josh would have been something in Denver if he could have stayed for Tebow.
Well, if he'd have stopped taping people's practices, he could have stayed.
Okay, but he drafted Tebow, and then he didn't get to benefit from it.
Well, if you stop taping people's practices in London,
I'll buy that.
You get to stay on as the head coach.
Well, so he had a chance to coach Andrew Luck or Tom Brady. I think I'll stay with Tom Brady. Can you blame him?
Well, he had a chance to coach Kyle Lorton. He the one that wanted the head. Hold on. Did he not know Andrew Luck was the quarterback of Indy? Did he not know Tom Brady was staying in New England? Mm-hmm. So when did he realize, like, was it like 5 minutes before the press conference that he was going to get introduced as the Colts head coach? Or was it like 5 months?
Yeah, but if the owner says you could have 4 years of coaching Tom Brady as his head coach, would you stay? Yeah, I would.
I mean, why is he out there looking for a head coaching job then?
I don't know that he is.
Oh, yeah, that, you read.
I don't know.
You do, Skip. Don't do that.
I don't believe it.
Oh, now you don't believe it.
I don't believe it.
You put something past that scoundrel.
He's got a little scoundrel in him, but his
a little.
The guy he's coaching under has a whole lot of scoundrel in him. Right?
I like that.
Yeah, okay.
But there's no false pretense. You already know Coach Belichick got it in him.
Enough Belichick, enough Brady for now.
No mercy.
Our next guest spent 2.5 years as the head coach of the Cleveland Browns. He was let go last week after a 2-5-1 start to the season. And Hugh Jackson, welcome to Undisputed.
Thank you for having me.
Nice to have you here. Yeah,
great
appreciate
to have you
joining us. Last week you mentioned wanting to possibly be an offensive coordinator again. So what is next for you?
Well, I think that's what's next. You know, I think you got to take a step back. The first thing I've done is just tried to process all of this that's happened over the last couple of weeks. And when I look back, take the things that are good and make sure you move on from the things that are bad. But the one thing I know I can do is go coordinate offensive football teams in the National Football League. I've done that and kind of go from there.
I agree with that. And I think you'd be great at that. And that was always your strength. And I'm not sure you got to use enough of your strength, especially play calling as a head coach. So let's start from the start. Let's go back 2 seasons ago to set the stage for what began to unfold, the Myles Garrett draft.
Mm-hmm.
How much input, how much of a vote did you have in which way to go in that first round?
Oh, I did. We were a collaborative group. Mm-hmm. You know, we worked through it as an organization, made a decision to take Miles, which we truly believe was the right decision.
Did you?
Oh, yeah, I did.
Because
no
you
doubt.
Loved a couple of quarterbacks.
Oh, no, I did like some quarterbacks, but I thought Miles was a generational player. I think he was a cornerstone player for the organization. At the time, there was a need at both positions. But when you looked at the draft and the players, I thought Miles was the best player.
Mm. Between Deshaun and Mahomes, which way would you have leaned?
I like them both.
All right.
I thought both of them were outstanding players. Obviously, Patrick's having an outstanding
season this year, and so is Deshaun. They're both playing really well for their football teams. They both have some skill sets that translate into the National Football League. Patrick can really throw it. Deshaun can throw it, and he uses his legs extremely well. So I think both of those guys are obviously proving out that they are worthy of the draft status that they had.
Okay. So in hindsight, I was bullish, as Shannon knows, on Deshaun. I thought Cleveland should have taken Deshaun and would forever regret not taking him. Do you look back and regret that at all? Would that have changed your life?
I don't, you know, to look back, hindsight's always 20/20, but when you're in it, you know, you don't get a chance to look back. I think obviously getting the offense to a situation where it was playing better, being an offensive head coach was important, but my whole vision was about the division. How do we win the division? What was going to be best for our football teams? And I knew if you couldn't stop the Ben Roethlisbergers, the Joe Flaccos, the Andy Daltons of the world and stop those receivers, that our chances of winning probably wasn't going to be very good. Mm.
But you mentioned, and you said you believe Myles Garrett was a generational player.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, Hugh, in order to win championships, you got to have that quarterback.
You're right, Shannon. There's no question about that. And I, you know, again, it's all how you see it, you know, as an organization. How much time are you going to take to make those choices and decisions? You know, you said, when I look back at it now, do you wish you could change it? Probably so. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, when you're in it, it's definitely the best decision.
Hmm. So how much input and vote did you have on this year's quarterback decision?
A ton. You know, Baker Mayfield is the right guy in the right time for the Cleveland Browns.
So how close were you on Sam Darnold? Was it a hard choice?
Oh, no doubt it was. Yeah. I mean, both of those guys are going to be outstanding players. But when I evaluated Baker, when I saw his internal strength, his ability to get people to play above and beyond the way they play, and just his internal belief on that he has this will to win, and you combine that with his accuracy and arm talent and his performances in big games, and you knew that this guy had it.
And John Dorsey was there with you on that?
No doubt.
And was Jimmy Haslam with you on that? Because he attended the rain, the pro day that Sam put on here at
USC. Yeah, he did. We were all, we went around. I thought that was one thing we did a great job of. We went around to go see all those guys personally and spend time with them and watch them work out and watch them.
Was Mr. Haslam leaning Darnold at that point? That's what was reported.
No, I don't, you know, again, I can't. Wherever that report came from, I did not know that. We made a decision as an organization collectively to take Baker Mayfield, and that was the right decision, no question.
Okay. So I have said this, as Shannon will attest many times on the show, I have always defended and supported you as an offensive mind, play caller, even as a head coach.
Mm-hmm.
But you lost me during the Hard Knocks episodes over the scene in which you called in Baker and Drew Stanton, and you informed Baker that he had won the backup job. And it seemed like from the start you were not giving him any chance to compete at all for the starting job with Tyrod. So can you background me on that? Can you explain how that all unfolded and why Baker didn't even get a chance from the start?
Absolutely. We made a commitment to Tyrod Taylor when we brought him in that he was going to be the starter. And I thought we needed to get him up and running in the offense. We had a new offensive coordinator, new system. And when you make that commitment in front of your football team and everybody else, you have to support that. If Baker Mayfield was going to become the starting quarterback, it was going to show itself out, you know, over time. It wasn't about if he was with the first unit, the second unit, the third unit. The talent was going to show itself in time. And so I wasn't concerned about that. We had a football team, as you mentioned, that was coming off an 0-16 season. So they needed to know who the leader was. And the one thing I always do with my players, I'm very honest and upfront. So I brought those two guys in to be honest and upfront and tell them exactly.
Drew and Baker.
Yes,
okay.
To tell them exactly how we were going to go about it. And I think that's what you do. I think all players want honesty from the head coach. They want to know the direction, exactly how it's going to go. So there's no ifs, ands, or buts. This is how we're going to do it. And that's what that was about.
So I'm a Baker guy, and it just was a little offensive to me that you relegated him to having to sit before the cameras. And you informed him as the first overall pick, congratulations, you've won the backup job over Drew Stanton. And it just seemed a little beneath him to have to sit through that. But he took it. And was it for the cameras that you would do that?
I don't think, you know, sometimes, and I'll take full responsibility for that. There's sometimes I can tell the cameras to be off. And it might have been a time where I wanted them off and there wasn't.
there hasn't been any other many scenes other than when we let players go, you know, where there was those kind of conversations that were had.
Would you have liked to have the cameras off?
Oh, absolutely. You like to have it back because I don't want people, I mean, it's all optics at the end of the day. You know, I'm going to do what I feel I need to do for a football team and be honest and upfront, and that's what I did. And it wasn't to put, you know, Baker down or to put Drew down. It was to do what I felt was right for a football team and being honest and upfront.
And Baker didn't complain about it that I know of.
No, it's never been an issue at all.
You look at Tyrod. You could have won the first game against the Steelers, missed a field goal. And then in New Orleans, you missed two field goals, two PATs, and then the robbery game at Oakland. So if you, let's just
say. That was Baker, though.
Yeah, but I'm just saying. But if you, the first two games, let's just say you win both of those games. Are you sitting here today?
No question. You know, I'm sitting here today because I didn't win enough football games. You know, at the end of the day, that's what it is. And I have to respect the decision that the organization made. But you said it. I mean, we had games, and the one thing I regret is I wasn't able to get our team to finish those games in overtime and make the kicks or make sure that we made enough plays, you know, offensively to put us in a better position so we would have a better record. And, again, that's what happens in these situations.
So Hard Knocks has become a powerful vehicle, and it can be beneficial for a team or it can start to tear it apart from inside out. How threatened were you by the fact that you had two coordinators who have big personalities and they were both former head coaches and the cameras started to love both of them, maybe to a fault?
Not at all. I mean, I hired both those guys.
You did?
I hired Todd and I hired Greg. And I don't think I ever get, never have been caught up in what people think or say. And again, I mean, like I said, that's the optics. I mean, I'm not a person that's weak or insecure by any stretch of the imagination. If I was, I never would have put those guys on my staff to begin with. So I know who they are. But at the same time, I think sometimes, you know, the audience seen certain clips of things that were going on. And so they thought, well, maybe there was never a conversation prior to, or this is the way it is until you see the whole thing and was there to see how some of those conversations went. I think we would feel different about them.
But you mentioned in the article that you did with Mary Kay Cabot that you wanted to convince Jimmy Haslam to let you take over the play calling. But that's what you do, Hugh. If you look at some of the great offensive mind that are head coaches, the Sean McVay, the Kyle Shanahans, Andy Reid, they're head coaches, but they also call plays. If you're so good at that, why would you relinquish that role?
Well, I think when you look back, when you're 1-15 on 16, you know, again, I came to Cleveland as one of the offensive play callers of the year. And I think that was hard. I wasn't able to get the offense up and going the way I wanted to. Doesn't matter why. When you look at it, I thought it was time, along with a conversation that we had within the organization, to move forward and make me more of the CEO type within the organization, coach the whole football team. I signed off on it. I hired a coordinator, and then I needed to allow him to do his job. You know, I gave him total autonomy of the offense, and I watched. And I got to a point, just like you're saying, where I thought there were things that wasn't being corrected that I needed to fix in order to get this train rolling in the right direction, and that's where I was headed. And again, in hindsight, that's something, as you just mentioned, you don't want to do. I'd rather bet on myself in the future than bet on somebody else.
So, go ahead.
Good. But to follow that up, you mentioned you were 1-15, you were 0-16.
Yes.
You didn't have the quarterback or the skill position around him. So now you get that, and when you get this, now you give it up, you?
You're right.
You finally get the ingredients to make the dish the way you want it, and now you're going to turn that cooking over to someone else.
No doubt, and that's what I said. I mean, I can't fault anybody for that but myself. You know, I made that choice and decision, and again, I like the personalities that I brought into the organization. I thought if we were going to change the narrative, we needed people who had been successful offensively and defensively. Again, people got tired of seeing what we were trying to make on offense. And I figured we needed a new strategy. I chose that, and I lost. At the end of the day, you know, that's what it is. I didn't get it done.
So you began to have some issues with Todd Haley, but I'm going to hold that question for a moment so that we can take a quick break.
Hugh, thank you for being here.
No mercy.
Defending champ, Alabama is the favorite to repeat. Who is going to win it all?
It's straight irresponsible to not pick Alabama for the national championship.
I love it.
Skip, you know what it's called. It's not the college football playoff. No. It's the AI, the Alabama Invitational.
I'm going to put my pride out on the table. I'm going to take 14th-ranked Michigan because Jim Harbaugh is a better all-around proven head football coach than Nick Saban.
What makes you think he's going to do what he hasn't been able to do since he's been there?
He has not yet had a quarterback, and now he has a real, live, bona fide college quarterback.
You know, a lot of people have confused guts and stupidity.
I just picked the team that plays the toughest schedule in America. Was that not guts?
Oh, so that was way back in August when you guys made your college football championship picks.
It's looking really good, isn't it?
The expert says
I know. We have to say, I have to say,
non-expert.
Well done. Well done, because we were all questioning you there, but Michigan, they like to say they're on their revenge tour.
Yeah.
So how are you feeling about the pick now?
May I remind my partner straight across the table that he ridiculed that pick to the point that he bet me three cases of Diet Mountain Dew that Michigan would lose five games this year.
Oh, you're getting those cases.
It could
then
still happen, I guess, but they're at Rutgers and then Indiana, and then they have to go to the Ohio State.
Rutgers in Indiana.
Rutgers,
they count.
No, they don't count.
Michigan is favored by 40 points at Rutgers.
Really?
Saturday. How about by that? 40 points.
But you want to talk about Alabama, who they play.
Well, easy. They got the Citadel coming up. Oh, so let's not throw stones in glass.
Conceding the three more cases, should I up my stakes here? I'm up 13 on you now?
You're not up anything.
Okay.
Because I'm going to get it back when they play in the college football playoff.
So, I'm going to say it again. I do believe, even though it's a long shot, because that Alabama team just might be Nick Saban's best team ever, because he's got by far his best quarterback ever.
Yeah.
But Michigan's quarterback is pretty good. I'm not saying he's great, but he's a good college quarterback, which is what I called him in August. And this team has all the ingredients to pull off the upset of Alabama because it plays defense. And to me, Don Brown's he's as good a coordinator as there is in college football,
And there's hands down at this point.
Hands down. And they are number one in yards allowed. They're number one in pass defense, which could cause Tua some issues. And they have a pass rush. You interviewed Chase Winovich at the end of the Northwestern game. And Rashawn Gary's finally back from his shoulder injury. And every time I look up, Uche is in somebody's backfield causing havoc. And on offense, they are fourth in the country in time of possession, 35 minutes to 25. Is that a formula for beating Alabama? Mm-hmm. Just keep the football away from Tua? Sure it is. Shea Patterson, he's 14 touchdowns to only three interceptions, and he's a nifty ball handler who can run it on key plays.
Yep.
He
mm-hmm.
can do the read option, and he'll scramble, and he'll get away in key play yards. And Caron Higdon, I don't know if he's going to be a great pro back, but he's a really good college football running back. 120 yards a game. In that receiving court, they got Tariq Black back, and he's their one speed guy, and he caught a touchdown pass the other day that got nullified on a formation problem, but he can fly, and Nico Collins and Peoples-Jones and Zach Gentry's going to be the first tight end taken in the draft. All of a sudden, all the ingredients are there to at least make it credible against Alabama. So if they do meet, and it's still a long ways to go because Michigan's got to go win at the Ohio State.
That's right.
But I will pick Michigan to beat Alabama if it comes to that in the national semifinal.
Well, I'm going
to
get half of my cases back. Go ahead, Joe.
On that, you were me, right? You were me. Okay, listen. Everything that you just said, everything was true until the end. You still can't pick Michigan, even with all of that being true. I didn't disagree with a thing you said. Michigan's fantastic. I love the Michigan Wolverines right now. Their defense is playing at a level right now that, quite frankly, I haven't seen in quite some time, even from teams like Alabama in the past couple of years. The problem is that when you pit Michigan up against Alabama, what you run into is an Alabama team that defensively is also very good. In fact, Alabama, on average, holds their opponents about 15 points under what those teams normally average for the season. Okay, and they've faced five top 50 offenses as according to yards per play. So it's not like they haven't played anybody in that statistical category. Well, if you hold Michigan 15 points under what they average, that's 21. They score 21 because Michigan scores 36, 21. So you're saying, hey, Michigan's going to score three touchdowns against the Tide.
And
as much as I love Don Brown and that defense, You're not holding Alabama 30 points under what they average. It's just not going to happen, regardless of how much time of possession you have. I mean, maybe one out of 10 times Michigan would get them. They get two or three turnovers. They hold the ball for close to 40 minutes, and then they were able to get them in the end. But in any type of model that you build, Alabama beats Michigan 9 out of 10 times by the score of about 34, 35 to 21. That's what it is. I don't think there's any team in America outside of Clemson that can stay within two possessions of Alabama. That's the striking part. When you go through the data, Clemson's the only team in America that can stay within two possessions. Even OU, that score would be about 50 to 37. Mm-hmm. Alabama.
50. Hold on.
Hey, Oklahoma, I know them all too well. They could not hold Alabama to 50 points. I don't believe it. No. They couldn't hold Texas Tech. If the quarterback hadn't got hurt at halftime, Texas Tech would add 60.
And I don't disagree with you.
Mm-hmm. And the thing is, and I agree with you, Clemson is really the only team because Lawrence can throw the ball. That situation has been clarified now that Kelly Bryant has been removed. But here's the thing. If Tua's healthy, nobody's beating Alabama.
I don't see it either.
Nobody's beating Alabama, Skip. Those receivers, that's the best group of receivers that Nick Saban has ever had at one particular time. Mm-hmm. Now, Julio Jones might have been the best, he's better than all of them. Amari Cooper. But together, this is the best group.
That's right.
Quarterback is not even close. Tua's going to go down as the best quarterback to ever come. And they had Bart Starr, they had Joe Namath, all those, none of them going to be able to touch Tua.
I don't know if he's better than Joe Namath at Alabama.
Stop it, Skip.
He was special.
Skip, the man just came off the bench and delivered. What quarterback you know in the history of the game can come off the bench at halftime and Coach Saban said, go get me that championship?
I'm old enough to remember this, but Joe Namath was a running quarterback at Alabama, and he could really run.
Did you see Tua with a bum leg? Yeah, with a flat tie and go get a touchdown. Yeah. Here's the thing, Skip. Michigan ranks 96th in pass offense.
Yeah, that's a rough one.
What you do? Now, you know to beat St. Nick, as Trevor Knight did, as you so eloquently, you love to bring that up. He lost to Trevor Knight in the Sugar Bowl. Chad Kelly.
Twice.
Deshaun Watson. How did they beat him? You're not going to line up in an eye. You're not going to line up in split back and run the ball down Nick Saban's throat.
LSU's been trying to do that for years.
Ask Leonard Fournette how that worked out for him. Mm. Now, you might, Zeke got 230, but Cordell Jones threw for like 250, had some timely runs in there too. But if you think you're just going to turn around and hand it to your running back and run the ball down that 3-4 defense, that's not going to happen. But they got old defensive back, old Pat Surtain Jr. Mm-hmm. He might be the best cornerback in football and a true freshman. Mm.
The only team that hasn't gotten a lot of love, and it's because of the quarterback situation, I think. Early in preseason, it was all Bama and Clemson. Then all of a sudden, the Kelly Bryant, Trevor Lawrence saga started to play out, and Clemson kind of fell off. Maybe didn't play their best in the opening month of the season. You know what they've done in their last four? They have drilled everybody to the point where they're winning games by right now an average of 50 points in their last four. In fact, when you look at what they've done, 240 to 36, 51-point margin in their last four games. If you average everything out, if you take all the data and you throw it in there and you say Bama's going to hold Clemson about 15 points under what they normally score and Clemson's going to hold Alabama about 18 points under what they normally score because that's what those defenses do, guess what you get? The only tight ball game that Alabama could potentially play. I would predict Alabama would win that ball game 34-32. And they're the only team in America that can stay within a possession. That's what the math says. That's what the data says. That's what my eyes say.
And we good at math over here.
I know what my eye test says. Michigan has four receivers who are going to play pro football. And I think you're both underestimating how they would be able to throw the ball against Alabama because they would have
Shea
to throw
do it with consistency.
He's accurate. He doesn't have a big arm, but he's got an accurate arm.
I love Jim and I love Pep. Pep Hamilton, I'm speaking of.
Coaches
their offensive
quarterback.
They coach the quarterbacks. They've got Jim McElwain.
Jim McElwain coaches the receivers.
He's the receivers
coach. That's as
coach.
Good a coaching staff as you will find in America.
I agree. And when I watch Shea play, it's like he's playing in handcuffs.
Okay,
because they don't let him throw the ball down the field. Even when he escapes the pocket,
Jim Harbaugh. But the last two games, as they're on their revenge tour, is that what they're calling
it?
Yeah.
I'm seeing
the handcuffs come off.
Maybe.
They started to come off against Penn State, and I saw him start to operate with a little swagger and confidence that I had not seen. He is good enough to beat Alabama.
When they go to the shoe, we'll see.
Yeah.
Because if Urban doesn't get it, we got something for him in
really
Alabama Invitational.
Yeah, we'll see. And, you know, I watched Tua very closely the other night, and he was starting to look, dare I say, human. Because I saw four because or five passes pick? That were starting to wobble and go sideways. I don't know. I started seeing
who have, maybe, who, like I said, right? I think maybe one or two out of ten, mm-hmm. Michigan could win. Mm. But, I mean, eight times out of ten, Bama's winning that game by two scores.
Mm. Who leading the nation in QBR, Skip? You love that stat now.
I know, but Shea Patterson's 11th in total QBR. That's pretty good.
So that means there's 10 between 1 and 11.
Okay.
There are 10 people between them.
Karon Higdon is pretty good.
Karon Higdon would not get 50 yards.
That's exactly the problem right there. We've seen Leonard Fournette, who I think was historically good at the college level, and he couldn't do anything against Alabama.
No.
And this Bama defense might not be quite as great as they have been over the last couple of years, but rest assured, this is still a very good defense. Like I said, they're still in the top five in defense, top 10 in scoring defense, and they've faced five top 50 offenses so far this year. So it's not like they haven't played anybody now.
Yep.
I'm just saying.
Jim Harbaugh was
leery.
A far better NFL coach than Nick Saban.
Wait,
and when it comes to big games, I'll go with Jim Harbaugh.
Don't do that,
Saban,
Skip.
Anytime.
Skip, he just beat Michigan State for like the first time. Stop.
Okay. He's beating everybody for the first time.
But
you know what? It just
it's working.
Keeps happening over and Let's over and over here. Again. Hottest team in America is Michigan.
Nothing you're saying is wrong except for, like, Jim's never even won a conference championship. In college. Let him at least do that. Nick Saban
he's
won five offensive titles in the NFL.
How do you get hotter than ghost peppers? We're as hot as you can get right now. We're a million on the Scoville meter.
Since 2008, Nick Saban has won more national championships than he's lost home games.
That's
Skip, did you know that?
It's an ugly
now
moment.
Now he does.
All right, Joel, on that note, thank you for being here. Always a good time. No mercy.
Thanks for listening to the Undisputed Podcast. I'm Jenny Taft. Join us again at the same time tomorrow morning, 9:30 Eastern. We'll see you then.
Facts, sports, one of one.